Pump up the volume on your parenting with Parent Pump Radio. Get motivated, get inspired, and get informed with how to parent in the new millennium. Your hosts for the show and Parent Coach Super Guides are Gretchen Downey and Jacqueline T.D. Quinn.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Downey.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline T.D. Quinn.
And are you an angry parent and just don't realize it? That's the topic of today.
This is a great topic. I deal with adolescents, and this topic comes up with them quite frequently. And recently, there was an incident that came up when an adolescent child came to me and told me that she had a conversation with her father, and she was very bold to be able to step up and do this. Basically, confront him and say that he yells at her all the time. And when he asked her when he yells at her, she said that she told him a lot, but when he's been drunk or drinking. And instead of looking at what she said and hearing what she said, he denies, one, that he drinks that much. And two, he says that he never yells at her. The way she looked at me when she said that was almost a confusion. Like, how can he say never yells at me and deny that he drinks too much? Because in her mind, she says he drinks a lot. And he also told her that he only drinks one or two glasses a day, and that's normal. And I guess she challenged him on that statement because she says, I've seen you drink half a bottle to a bottle of wine in one night. And he just continues denying that. And I think that the denial of it, denial of yelling, and just the denial that she's drinking a lot from her point of view was what made her very upset.
Right. And kids are generally extremely honest, first of all. So they usually call it just like they see it. And there's a lot of honesty in it. So chances are if this kid or this child or adolescent can see such detail as a whole bottle of wine being gone, or if there's more beer bottles or whatever there is on the counters, this child is observant of their environment and they have no reason to lie about those kinds of things. So that's an intriguing piece to all of this.
My point is we don't realize we get angry when we're in the moment. We don't realize our voice is being raised, but the person, the child who is not angry is the recipient of that. So the tone of your voice, the intention of your voice, and where you have the energy, it's going to come off like a brick wall to that child. And I can see, hey, I'll give it to this parent that he feels he's never yelled. In his mind, he probably hasn't. But I think the whole part of him not recognizing and listening to his child is what is confusing to her. So I like to ask you, Gretchen, like, why do we get angry and what's going on inside of us as parents when we get angry?
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting and complex scenario here because you have all these dynamics going on with this individual, this father in this case. And this is a common one, Jackie.
Yeah.
I see this a lot, and I know you've seen it before too. And anger is a reaction. And just like you said, people, when it's starting to happen, they don't realize that they just get caught in that moment. And that is when we don't have conscious awareness of ourselves, or some people call it mindful awareness, being aware of what you're doing in the moment at any given moment in time. And so we just get on this reactive pattern. And this is what plagues us on many levels, whether it be anger, fear, resentments, it doesn't matter what it is. And there's a little part in the brain called the amygdala, and we may have spoken on this on other
Yes.
shows about this, but it's great to reinforce. I don't think we can say this enough, is that that amygdala is your kind of flight or fright response organ. It's kind of the reptilian brain. And when we fill our lives with fear and drama and chaos and anger and those kinds of things, it activates that amygdala, okay? And when we practice that, now it becomes automatic because now we've built more neuro patterns and neurochemistry in the brain to make that happen very often and frequently, okay? And so now these just become the automatic patterns. And the only way to stop them is if you choose to. And the only way you can choose to, if you become aware of that you're doing it in the first place. Now, I would venture to say that this person knows what they're doing, because they've had to probably deny this on more than one occasion. And they're denying it because they want to continue the behavior. So they're aware of that. They know they want to continue drinking. They don't want to be called out on it. They're lying to, when someone lies, they know they're covering up something, right?
Yes.
And that's what's happening with this person in this case most often, more often than not. And same way with the yelling. they may not be aware of themselves yelling, especially not when they're drinking, because there's inhibitory effects that drugs and alcohol and those kinds of things can have on the neurotransmitters in the brain and how it works and functions. I would say, if I could make an analogy a little bit, I'm not saying someone has ADD, but it can affect the brain in that capacity, like certain areas almost get turned off electrically, or maybe turned on in the wrong way electrically. And so it can have that kind of an effect. And so where they just don't really have a lot of control and regulation. So these are some of the side effects of substance use and abuse, and if it turns into abuse, right?
Right, and also memory, right? Substance abuse affects memory, so it could be very well that he doesn't remember yelling when he's been drinking.
It can, if it's prolonged and those kinds of things. And then I think, Jackie, the whole other big piece of this thing is looking at the denial.
Yes.
So the denial is an issue sometimes of pain within that person. There may be a lot of dysfunction, a lot of pain going on, and alcohol and other drugs can be used for that numbing purpose. So, you know, this isn't a counseling program. This is a coaching program, right? This is a coaching show. But that person probably has a lot to deal with in terms of healing old issues and wounds around themselves and whatnot. That creates a whole challenging dynamic that affects the child and what comes out on the child. Now, in this case, you had a child that was very alert and aware and was very concrete about what they heard and saw. And it's not so much a perception if it keeps getting repeated, right?
Yeah.
If someone's yelling at you and being verbally abusive to you, acting in unloving ways, you're going to feel it. And children feel it very strongly. And so in this case, that probably sounds likely happened, correct?
Yeah.
And the important thing is to coach the child through that, because chances are, unless the person, the parent, is seeking some type of therapy, mm-hmm. for their behavior, or number one, that they even want to change it.
That's
some
true.
Some want to remain right where they're at. They don't want to look at what's going on. This is especially true of people with narcissistic tendencies and borderline personality disorders. It is too painful to look at themselves. It is much easier to blame.
Yep.
That's less painful to blame and tell someone else they're lying or tell someone else they're not seeing things clearly than it is to look at your own self and your own dysfunctions, your own brokenness, and actually make those shifts and changes within yourself. It's too painful, because there may be things that happened in their childhood or their upbringing or whatever things that really just traumatize them, okay?
Right.
And so until they want help, want to seek help, you're stuck. Every human being has that free will to do that. I found it both ways, Jackie. I found it where there's people that want to do that and want to get parent coaching in that regard. And there's also those that don't or won't. And then the goal becomes to really fortify that child and validate them and what they're seeing and hearing, and helping them work through that in loving, productive ways.
And I'd like to talk about how to do that, because I'm sure there are plenty of parents out there who are undiagnosed narcissists or borderline personality. So then how do we as coaches, and maybe as the other parent, maybe these two parents are divorced, because we have over 50% of America is divorced, right? So how does the other parent help that child to fortify? So let's talk about that later. But before we talk about that, what I'd like to know from you, since you are so great with neurology and all this, is what is happening to the child's brain and their neurology when they're receiving the denial, the yelling, the screaming, and maybe even the hitting?
Yeah, sometimes it can be hitting. And I do actually see most of this stuff happening in divorce situations. And I mean, this is sometimes what leads to divorce when these types of behaviors are going on. From the receiving side of things, if a child is really strong mentally, emotionally, they're fairly solid and have a good foundation, they can usually mitigate and move through some of these things and go somewhat unscathed. I'm not saying completely. But for example, the fact that this child was able to stand up for themselves, and it might have something to do with adolescence.
Yeah.
Because that adolescent brain is changing and they want to do things differently than the adults do. They see, they look at life a different way, adolescents and teens.
Yeah.
They see ways to improve it. They want to change their environments. This is normal. This is what their novelty-seeking brain is doing. And if they're strong enough to have a voice, speak honestly and stand up for themselves, then that is awesome. And you just want to help them improve their communication style, help them speak more effectively when they're doing this and give them extra ideas and whatnot. So validate those kinds of things for them. Now, for the child that is struggling emotionally and does not have that emotional support, this requires a lot more work and coaching with their emotional technologies and helping them move up, helping them understand that the things they're hearing, like, for example, if they're hearing they're not good, they're wrong, they're little liars, then that needs to be corrected and have some dialogue and discussion about that, helping them understand that they aren't bad and they aren't wrong, and that what they're seeing, if there's truth to what they're seeing, that it's validated so as to build their self-esteem, their self-worth, their self-value, because that's usually what gets hit the hardest. And then those cause all sorts of problems, which ultimately lead them into the same spiral that their difficult parent is experiencing. And we don't want that to happen. When these patterns become habitual, so back to your original question, the neurochemistry of the brain, when these become habitual, they just get written in there in the neurons and it gets stored in that hippocampus. So it becomes automatic behavior. So the child becomes automatically thinking, I'm wrong, or I'm bad, or I'm not enough, or this parent doesn't love me, I'm unlovable. And these are tragic things for kids to feel. Or worse off even is that they don't trust life, that life isn't good. They can't trust anybody. They can't even trust themselves and what they're thinking and the things they're observing, because nobody's validating the truth of what they're seeing because the parent is too dysfunctional in this case. You know, and these can be other situations like foster care situations as well. There are many different definitions of families and homes that kids are in. And we really have to work with that and work with their upward development of what they're thinking about themselves. And sometimes that means restructuring that story that they're telling themselves about themselves, or that the adults have told them about themselves. You're not good enough. You're wrong. You're bad. You're whatever.
Yeah.
You're annoying to me.
Yeah.
I don't like you. You're not worthy of being talked to with respect.
Okay. Thank you. Now, we talked about parents being divorced. Say you do have one parent who is more destructive. If you have the other parent who is wanting to fortify the child, can you give us some advice on how the parent who wants to fortify their child, even though that child still has to go back to the destructive parent, what can that parent do?
I know this subject very, very well. And I'm here to tell any parent out there who thinks that they cannot influence their child, especially when they have a destructive counterpart or former ex-spouse or whatever, it's not the case. If there is one good adult in this child's life, in a child's life, they can have an incredible impact. And don't ever think otherwise. So everything that that conscious, alert, awake parent does matters. The best thing that they can do is help to validate what the child sees. If the child is observing something, perhaps in this case, they might come back hurt and complaining and whatever, that this is what was said to me. I was told I was a liar. I was yelled at. You can help them process their feelings, one. You can validate what occurred. And also that
Wait,
they...
Wait, I want to slow down. Can you elaborate that, number one, process their feeling? Can you... tell us, for the parent who's never processed the child's feelings,
sure,
what that looks like.
I really encourage parents to get to understand the emotional scale and how to use the emotional technologies within themselves. This is stuff that I put on my website and in my Developing the Conscious Child book over and over. And you can actually find this emotional scale, the Abraham Hicks emotional scale, all over the website. But you need to learn how to use it because it's one of your key technologies in understanding things. So for example, if a child comes in feeling bad, awful, really low about the situation, when you feel low emotions, we have a range, right? Low to high. And think of them in terms of frequencies, low to high. Hate, powerlessness, depression.
Anger.
Is lower. Anger is a little higher than that. Yeah. It's a higher frequency. Anger is a rebounding from that. It feels like relief compared to powerlessness.
That's
and
true.
Depression. So you're moving in the right direction and trying to move up your emotional scale. And then it goes maybe to resentment. And then maybe it's just irritation and frustration. Then maybe contentment. And then you move into hopefulness, maybe optimism, joy, gratitude, love. Joy and love are the highest. This emotional scale, the Abraham Hicks emotional scale, is like 22 different emotions. And you can add other ones. I always add different ones in there for different kids. But understand how they work. And the lower the emotion, the the further off you are from how the higher aspect of your nature sees the situation. So really, you're operating an ego on the low end. And when you get up to the high end, you are operating in your higher self, your soul, your God spark. This is how it sees the situation. So when a child, I taught this to my kids very early, because they experienced a lot of these things that we're talking about today. And I taught them, for example, when you do have a really destructive ex or counterpart or former whatever, or maybe you're still in a marriage where you have this going on. And you have to fortify the child. You have to help them understand what's going on. And you don't want them to grow up to be dysfunctional, bitter adults. You still want them to be loving, caring, capable, contributing human beings. When children are feeling this way, they feel bad that adult is berating them, like they're bad and wrong. At the same time, they want to fix or help this adult, like say, hey, you're drinking, you're behaving terrible, and you're talking to me terrible, right?
Yeah.
So what I usually do is I'll say to the child, hey, you're confronting them, not because you're bad. You're confronting them because you love them. You want them to behave better. You want them to be what they're supposed to be and what they can be as human beings. That statement alone, and I'm goosebumping, Jackie, and that statement alone just takes the intensity out of everything for the kids, because they feel like they're bad for being pushy with their parent, standing up and saying, I've had enough.
They feel bad because they feel bad.
Well, and they were punished for it too. Yeah, and so punishment always comes with the feeling of you're wrong. It's for domination and control.
Yep.
It's for allowing that poor behavior of the parent to continue. And so the child feels they were told that in essence from that, they're told you are bad and wrong.
Right.
That's how they kind of interpret it. Something very similar to that. Helping them understand and process that you aren't bad or wrong. You actually love them. You want them to be better human beings. That is love.
Yeah.
And so now they kind of come back out of hating the other parent. And that's so important. Now, I know some people like, oh, they want them to be not like that other parent when they're in this competition and stuff. And I'm like, no, no, no. You want them to do this. You want them to, because the children ultimately want to love the parents. They do. So this is the way you process with them.
Yeah. So that's number one. You said number two was forgot now. This is what happened. We get into a conversation.
We get into a conversation and I can't remember what the second one was.
So once you help the child process, I guess you want to help validate that they're not wrong for how they feel, I would think. And what other ways would you fortify the child?
I think helping them feel better about themselves on that emotional scale. So I tease it out. You might say, okay, now let's walk through what you feel about what your father just said or did or the situation. So really isolate each item. Now, how do you feel about yourself? And figure out where that is for them. So I'm like, well, I don't know. I just don't have any confidence, or I don't believe in my, whatever it is. They'll come up with that, however they're feeling. That's where I take them and I walk them up that emotional scale and help them to say something different, a different story about themselves, something a little more optimistic. Do you believe what other people say and think? Or does it matter what you believe about yourself? Do you believe you're bad? And this person may have just told you that you're bad or wrong. Do you believe you're bad? Yeah. And they'll say no. I just say, then why would you? Are you not being honest and caring? Yes. And are you not being kind by trying to move them in a different direction? Yes. So don't you love yourself for this? These are the things I'm goosebumping. These are the things that I say to them. And suddenly they just put themselves back up on a pedestal. So repeat this often with your children, especially when they're going through, struggling through these kinds of things. Put them back on that pedestal because that's where you want them. Because when you do that, Jackie, then you light up the higher thinking centers of the brain that actually intuit to higher emotions and actually your superconscious self, which is your soul, right, your higher self. And then they can be back in touch with their intuition, their highest aspect of their nature, instead of groveling down in the ego and the amygdala.
Right. This is a bullying. It's almost bullying. So even if both parents are great parents, your children may be going through bullying, cyberbullying in school. So these are great things to even teach your child, even if you have two great constructive parents, so that they learn that whatever the kids at school say about themselves isn't the truth.
It's a great point, Jackie, because it just translates over into these other things. In essence, the family is always the learning environment. So in this case, these kids are actually getting a pretty good learning, whether it feels like it or not in the moment. And when they get that learning, they suddenly become stronger. They have become more evolved, and now they translate it into the very subject you're talking about, like bullying or something else. And so now they can weather that storm much better. All these things actually have, and I taught my children this too, all these things actually have a benefit for you. It's not always horrible and awful, even though it feels like it. There's always a silver lining to everything. And I've pointed out to my kids, look how much stronger you have become. Look how much more able you are to identify people that have dysfunctions, that have substance abuse, that you know to stay clear of them, that you know how to put up your own boundaries, that you know how to stay solid even while they are not, and advocate for yourself. These are huge things. So when your kid goes out in the world in a very short period of time, they're well equipped. And that's the point of all of that.
That's where I was really trying to help this adolescent was, even though she felt bad, I wanted her to see herself in her power to be being able to speak how she felt for so long that she kept inside. Mm-hmm. And I think it also has a little to do with her being an adolescent and getting into that hormonal stage, because I find that kids younger than, say, 11 or 10, they tend to be quieter and keeping all these things in.
Well, and that's because in the adolescent time, they are actually shifting from a child and body and brain to an adult brain and body. And so that brain is changing so much. And a lot of how the behaviors that they had when they were a child are dissolving, some of those neurons are even dissolving. And now they're building neurons to match an adult brain, which will do some of these things.
Yeah.
And so they're exercising and testing it during this time period. And that's natural and normal. And you want them to be able to do that, because every generation is here to change and to make improvements upon the world as it currently exists. So they're here to clean and clear things up. Yeah. Every generation is designed to do that. And so this child is going to be no different in that regard.
So I think as parents, we need to realize that sometimes something that our child just mentioned to us now, the first time we heard it, because I think this is the first time she told her dad, I think he was pretty shocked, not realizing that this has been happening for a long time.
Clearly, she's seen it quite often because she knew exactly what she's talking about.
So I'm sure he's denying it also because she's never said it. But because it's the first time, it's just she's just owning her power. She's getting, like you said, between the hormones physically and just feeling like enough is enough and I want to stand up for myself. So we talked about the parent basically recognizing when your child is saying this. We have some time left. And so I want to talk about these parents who say they want to make a difference, make a change, right? Because obviously, if you're a narcissist or you have personality, they're going to deny. So if you're listening to this, and you want to make a change and you want to make difference, I think one of the first thing is the mindful technique.
Yeah, I think something that's really helpful to parents who are undergoing a lot of stress with this, so living in that type of family environment and or even going through a divorce can be very stressful. And especially when the upward development of your children, emotional, spiritual, and physical, rely primarily on one person, then that person needs to do things for themselves and things that will help the kid. So practicing mindful awareness techniques is fabulous. It will help calm and quiet the mind. We also know that when we do these practices, it allows you to become more heart-centered. And there is so much research now connected with the heart and its energy and energy fields and its influences upon the brain. And so when the mind and the brain are quiet, you can have more access to the higher thinking centers of your brain for reflection, for good decision making, for maintaining calm and peace and those kinds of things for the child. And it'll help you take down all your cortisol levels, all those stress hormones, so that you can kind of move through more clearly. And your health is important too when you're going through these things as well. That's just key.
So these are things that the mindful techniques is what we do before we get angry, just so that we have more comprehension and more awareness when we do get angry. So let's say you got angry or you got irritable or you sort of your tone changed with your children and now they're upset. The first thing is, like I said before, don't deny it. Own your stuff. Own that you did it. And I say do-over. And what do we mean when we say do-over, Gretchen? Because we talked about some things when we say do-over.
Well, I usually with parents, I'm like, the best thing you can do and how you can leverage things the best with your kid especially as a teen or adolescent, and get them to really listen to you is to own what you did wrong. I usually say, because I did this all the time with my kids, and it really got their respect and their attention. I say, look, I used to think incorrectly about this subject, or I reacted incorrectly. I'm really sorry. Can we do this over?
Right.
And just you saying sorry and recognizing that you made a mistake and that it's okay to make mistakes, because this is probably what the person doing substance abuse and all these other things in denial, they don't feel like they can make mistakes and that it's okay. And you want to teach your child, because we are human beings. We make lots of mistakes, but they're always for our learning. So I've taught my kids very early on that it's okay. I make them, but the important thing is to try to correct them and make improvements upon yourself. Because if you don't, I mean, that's the definition of a fool. It's not someone who doesn't necessarily know about it.
Yeah.
And it's okay to do that. And that's where they can get some good leverage for their kids.
For me, when you are yelling at your children, they are now in a fight or flight mode and they're going to run. So then the feeling of fight and flight is safety. They want to be safe. They want to feel safe. So if I did get irritable with my kids, and I can tell, you know, they'll start crying. First thing I do is I own it. I apologize. And then I create a safe space for them again so they can come back to me. They're not running away. So I think restoring that sense of safety and how you can do that is show warmth, give hugs. I'll say, let's play card games. Let's play board games so that we can connect physically.
And it's so important what you said, Jackie, because you first repair or correct and own what didn't happen. Because I've seen people just go, hey, let's go play, or let's go have do something happy and fun as a method of trying to shove it under the rug and make the child forget about it.
Yeah.
But the most important step was the one you mentioned, which is to own it first and then move it into something else. And it shows that you're teaching your kids such amazing things with this, because you're teaching them to move past it. You're teaching to take responsibility. You're teaching them that it's okay and that I don't have to think badly about myself. And also you're teaching them connection with the family, to pull the whole family back together, and that it's all okay. We still love each other in the end, and that we're just here in a process of learning together.
And if for some reason, maybe your child is not ready to come and play with you physically, they need time to process too. And I will say, you know, I'm sorry, and we can talk about how we can do it better. I know you need some time, but mommy's right outside. And when you're ready, come on out and we'll do some things fun.
And ensure that, though, because there's some kids that love to sulk and they love to hold grudges. And a lot of our TV shows, even on some of these big channels, love to have lots of drama so that they get really upset and throw these temper tantrums. So make sure that isn't happening, because if that's the case, you need to cut that short really fast and help them to get over that. But if a child does need processing, then you give them that latitude and that space.
Okay, well, we're out of time. This was a great subject. We might have to do a part two someday.
Have a great day. Thank you so much for joining us today on Parent Pump Radio. You can go to parentpumpradio.com and click on the pink box on the top of our homepage to listen to our new and archived shows, which are featured on missionsradio.org. That's missions with an S, radio.org. And once you're there, subscribe to our news feed to be notified of new releases. And for those of you that don't know, the RSS feed button is right next to the follow and share buttons on the top of this page that you're on, the one that features our shows. And that's the button you want to click to be notified of any new episodes. Also, you can visit us at our website, www.parentpumpradio, to leave your comments, questions, and topic suggestions, and to connect with us on social media. When you sign up on our website, we have a free gift for you, so don't miss out. So until next time, have a wonderful week.